So what Martin shared is not really a million miles away from what we are going to be looking at this morning. And as we look at our theme this morning, what I'd like you to do is to just reflect as we look at it on these two themes, these two questions. And the first question is, what are the qualities you would expect to experience in a good friendship? I'm not going to ask you to shout those out, but just be pondering that as we actually go through this morning. And the second question is, what is your experience of or your expectations of friendship with Jesus? Two separate questions. We're looking at we're starting a series. Dave started last week. We're going to go on until Easter, looking at what it means to be a good news people. Why are we good news? What is that good news? How do we share it with others? And one of the pieces of incredibly good news that we have is that we can experience and share with others is that Jesus invites us to be his friends. And he longs for us to be in relationship with us. Our God is a relational God. He's a revelatory God as well. He desires to reveal himself to us, but he desires for relationship. And I guess we all know the hymn, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. I haven't sung it for quite a long time now, but I wonder what was in the minds of the hearers of Jesus when Jesus talked about being friends with him 2,000 years ago. And when Jesus invited them and invites us today to be his friends. How can you be a friend of a prominent rabbi and a teacher? How can you be a friend of somebody who did some amazing things? You know, he taught, he healed, he restored, he forgave, he prayed, he acted in all sorts of amazing ways. This was the Jesus that he said to his disciples and all his friends, you are my friends. You have a friendship with me. How can you be a friend of God? That's the challenge today. And what good news it is to be invited to be a friend of God by Jesus. And the Jews listening to Jesus would surely identify with some of their forerunners. Enoch, for example, who was a friend of God. He walked with God in friendship. Abraham, whose faith made him a friend of God, and Moses, who believed in God and became a friend of his. David, a man after God's own heart, who had an honest and direct relationship with God as friend. And those people who were hearing Jesus speak at those times 2,000 years ago would also know from their history of the various friendships that there were in the Old Testament. Moses and Aaron, Elijah and Elisha, Naomi and Ruth, David and Jonathan, and all sorts of other examples as well. And I'm sure that Jesus saying, I want you to be my friends, was a shock to his hearers, that they could have a relationship with him. When Jesus was speaking to the Samaritan woman, he actually said, actually, God is spirit. I wonder what came to her mind when she heard that. What comes to our mind now? I mean, how can you relate to a spirit? How can you be friends with a spirit? Can I understand a spirit? Does a spirit have feelings? Can I talk with someone who is spirit? How can I worship in spirit and in truth, which was the context of that passage there? Would God want to be friends with me? And then in Timothy, we read this. The blessed and only, talking about God, the blessed and only ruler, the King of kings, the Lord of lords, who alone is immortal and who lives in unapproachable light, whom no one has seen or can see. How can you be friends with the God who dwells in unapproachable light? That's the challenge. Could this sort of God walk with me? Could this sort of God give me hope through the storms of life? Could this sort of God hold my hand? Could this sort of God support me as I go through all the various things that I will go through from birth to death? Is this the sort of God who will dry my tears? Is this the sort of God who can forgive me? Is this the sort of God who will tell me what I honestly need to hear? Looking through the Old Testament and the New Testament, these are the sorts of words that describe God. And the more I look at these words, the more I think, wow, is this sort of God? Can I have a friendship with this sort of God? He's infinite, he's immortal, he's immutable, it means he can't change. Self-sufficient, invisible, omnipotent, all-powerful, present everywhere, knows everything, incomparably wise, completely faithful, infinitely good, impartially just, unendingly merciful, totally gracious, intrinsically loving, perfectly holy, immensely glorious. This is God, and this is the one who invites us to be his friend. And I'm not any of those things. And certainly I'm not any of them consistently in any way whatsoever. Can I count on God as my friend? The Jews were so awed by him that they couldn't even begin to express his name verbally. They couldn't speak Yahweh. That was forbidden to them because he was so utterly holy. This was someone who in his presence they needed to watch their P's and Q's. And the Pharisees did that all the time. But you know, what makes the difference? And the good news is that Jesus is not some distant, unapproachable spirit who is all those things, which he is, dwelling in unapproachable light, invisible, untouchable, unknowable. But he's someone who is God with skin on. Someone who is God in human form. And John 1:14 says this very familiar passage to us. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling amongst us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And then in John 14, verse 9, Jesus said, he who has seen me has seen the Father. So Jesus is the image of the invisible God, and that's the good news. That's a great news that we have. Jesus is the invisible God in human form that we can touch, that we can relate to, that we can speak to, and who walked this earth for 33 years, is now still near us through the Holy Spirit who reveals him to us all the time. Somebody who can walk alongside us. Jesus said, lo, I will be with you always. I will walk with you through everything that you experience. And this man, Jesus, is totally God and totally man at one and the same time. I can't explain it. It's a mystery. But he is totally God and totally man at one and the same time. God in the flesh with hands and feet and eyes and ears. Someone we can identify with, someone we can relate to, someone we can be friends with. And Paul says to the Philippian church that being found in appearance as a man, this Jesus walked this earth. But amazingly, at the same time as being fully man, he's also God with all the characteristics in that daunting list that we looked at. Fully and completely God and man, and that's great news. But the remarkable good news is this, and here's the thing. This is what we need to realize. The gospel message is a message of the unseen and unknowable God who is made visible and knowable through our relationship with Jesus. We can know him personally, the image of the invisible God, the real deal, the creator and the sustainer of the universe can be our friend and my God at one and the same time. And he issues an invitation that we might be his friends. So we're going to look at this passage, John 15, verses 12 to 16. My command is this. Love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends, if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you. Well, let's look at this passage. Let's look at verse 12. Straightforward verse. Easy enough to understand, but is it challenging? Is it really, really challenging, that verse? Jesus is speaking here to his disciples in the upper room, just days before his death. And his command, not his recommendation or his advice, but his command was to love one another. I don't know about you, but that can be difficult in church life, to get on. And one of the reasons is that, of course, we don't choose one another. It's because of our relationship with God that God brings us together. And sometimes that can be tough. Sometimes that can be really, really difficult. That sometimes we don't get on with people. But Jesus said, love one another. That's the crucial challenge. And it's tough, not just in church life, but of course in the community in which we live. We don't necessarily get on with our neighbours. We don't necessarily get on with people in our street, with the clubs and societies that we're involved in. Some people we get on with, some people we don't. But actually Jesus said, love one another. Love one another. But there's even more challenge at the end of the verse, because the standard of love is that you love one another with the same quality and nature and motivation of love that Jesus had in loving us. Love one another as I have loved you. And since God is in his essence love, John talks about God is love. That's him through and through. If he was a stick of rock, love would be printed all the way through the stick of rock, if I could bring it down to that level. That's God is through and through love. But that love is totally sacrificial. It doesn't distinguish between people. It transcends everything else. It loves people that you don't like. It loves people that you don't get on with. It loves in all circumstances. And it doesn't require you to be loved back by the people. Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you. So you see, we get a glimpse of friendship here in God's eyes. There is a quality of love within a friendship which is absolutely crucial. Love one another as I have loved you. And then we come on to verse 13. Jesus says here something which is even more challenging than verse 12. There is no love greater than when we lay down our lives for our friends. I mean, that's something, isn't it, when you think about it? That there is no greater love than laying down our lives for our friends. I find this fascinating, actually, because if you read the Sermon on the Mount carefully, you would have expected him to have said, there is no love greater than we lay down our lives for our enemies. So for me, it sounds as though greater love is to actually love an enemy than it is to love a friend. It's easier to love a friend, isn't it? But I think that's comparing friends and enemies. It's almost like if you have a continuum. This end is loving friends, and this end is loving enemies. Surely the greater love is loving your enemy rather than your friend. But Jesus didn't say that. He said, greater love had no man than he lays down his life for his friends. And I think that probably one reason why we tend to think of the opposite of friends to be enemies is because of this passage in Romans, where Paul says to the Roman church, he said, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, although for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He died for us while we were still sinners, while we were his enemies. But that wasn't what Jesus said. That wasn't what Jesus was thinking about. He was comparing not friends and enemies, but the distinction between, on the one hand, being servant-hearted and helping and supporting people in need, and at the other hand, laying down your life completely for that person. And you see, the distinction is not friends and enemies. The distinction is between giving somebody a free meal or mowing their lawn or doing whatever act of unusual kindness, to think back to the Churches Together meeting that we had, to do an act of unusual kindness here, to pay the ultimate price, which is here. That's what Jesus was meaning here. Making the biggest sacrifice of all for your life, for someone else. That's the greater love, complete sacrifice. There are all sorts of stories about the sacrificial actions of people in the Twin Towers disaster who ran back into the building in order to save people and died as a result of it. There's a man called Maximilian Kolbe who was in Auschwitz, and just thinking of the anniversary of the Holocaust at the moment in Auschwitz. If a guard died, then 10 people were chosen and they were executed for the life of that one person. And one of those 10 on one particular occasion was a man who had family and children and so on. And Maximilian Kolbe, who was a Catholic priest, said, I will stand in for that man. And he was executed in that man's place. Those of you who've read The Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens will know that right at the end, Sidney Carton substituted himself and was subject to execution in order that someone else might be saved. There are amazing examples of the Chernobyl disaster, where some of the scientists and workers there went back in at great personal cost to their health and their life in order to save others. I'm sure that there are firemen in Australia that put their lives on the line in order to save people at the moment. You see, the greater thing is being prepared to sacrifice our lives for others. And of course, Jesus, in saying this, was preparing them for his sacrifice for them upon the cross. And he was doing this for his friends. He was doing this for those that he loved. So here's another glimpse of friendship in this passage. Considering others' needs more than our own. Loving so much that it hurts. And that you're willing to go all the way for your friends. Verse 14 gets even harder than that to comprehend. Jesus tells them who his friends are. He said, you are my friends if you do what I command. You are my friends if you do what I command. It sounds like you can't be his friends unless you do what he wants. It's a funny sort of friendship, really. It sounds almost childish, doesn't it, to say that? That certainly it's a dominating sort of friendship. I'll be friends with you if you do what I say. That's not right. In one way, you can see that the friendship relationship between Jesus and us can't be equal, because he's God and we're not. So it can't be equal. He's God after all. Jonathan and David were friends in the Old Testament, but actually it wasn't an equal friendship, even though they were totally devoted to one another, because actually David was the anointed king of Israel in waiting. And Jonathan said this in 1 Samuel 20, verse 4, "Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it for you. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it for you. Whatever you command, I'll do it." This is an example of a friend obeying commands. And there's another example as well in David's life. David had a number of friends, and he had three special friends. They were called three mighty chief warriors, if you see in verse 13. And David was in his stronghold within his army, and the enemies, the Philistine army, were at Bethlehem. And David longed for water, for a drink, from a cool spring. And so he said, "Oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." And his three close friends heard the desire of his heart. And putting all caution to the wind, they actually went behind enemy lines to Bethlehem. They drew some water. They took it back to David and said, "Here, here's the water." And David was so astonished and so filled with regret that he'd placed his friends in such mortal danger that he poured the water out on the ground as an offering to God and said, "I can't drink this because of what you have done." You know, those three friends were so close to David, their king, that they heard the cry of his heart and they were prepared to do everything, even to the point of death, in order to satisfy him. The key to understanding this is this: my command is this. My command is this. What's Jesus commanding? He's commanding us to love one another as I have loved you. That's the command. So friends love with the quality of love that is love one another as I have loved you in verse 12. That's the command. Obedience follows love. Because we love and because we're friends with God, we want to obey him. So the if you do what I command, is not actually, I will only do this if you command it, but actually it is, I long to follow your commands, God. I long to be yours. I long to do what you want to do because of love, loving one another as I have loved you. That's the key to that story of David and his three friends. They did it out of closeness and friendship and love and relationship. And so when this passage says, "You are my friends if you do what I command," we're reminded that in John 14, verse 15, he says, "If you love me, you will obey what I command." So the if is not a requirement. It's actually saying, because we love one another, because we love Jesus, because we're his friend, then we'll want to do what he wants us to do. And here's another characteristic of faith and friendship: in its submission to one another. It's a key of friendship. That's why Jesus washed his disciples' feet in John chapter 13. He wanted to submit himself to his friends and to serve them in whatever way he could. This is the Jesus who gave his life at Calvary, and that's great news. And then, in verse 15, Jesus takes the lid off it all and tells us what all this is about. He's actually saying, you might think that you're servants, but actually you're not servants, you're my friends. He has a totally open, transparent, honest relationship with his friends. You're not servants, you're not slaves, you're not kept in the dark, you're not second-rate partners, you're not phony friends, but you're friends with whom Jesus shares his Father's heart completely. And friendship is about being open and honest, speaking the truth in love, being careful that everything that we say, whether it's critical or not, is actually said in love. Sometimes we're very vulnerable in our friendships. Sometimes we are told things by our friends that we would rather not hear. Sometimes we have to say things to our friends that they would rather not hear. But the relationship is one of honesty and truth and submission, commitment to one another. And that's true whether it's amongst ourselves or whether it's also with Jesus himself. And then the last thing that Jesus says in this passage is quite stunning, really. We often think that we come to Jesus, that somehow we prepare our hearts and we respond and we actually say, well, I chose to be a friend of yours. I chose to be your disciple. But actually Jesus said, you didn't choose anything. I chose you. I chose you to be my friend. And you know, at the heart of the beginning of all creation, God chose the people that he knew were going to be his friends, right before we had any response in our hearts or our lives, he had already chosen us. He chose us. We didn't choose him. And all of this is good news. In fact, it's wonderful news that although we seek to follow him and to become his friend, he takes the initiative. He invites us to be his friend. We didn't choose him. By his grace and his mercy, he chooses us. So again, love and obedience is not a condition of friendship, but it's an outcome of his initiative. Isn't it amazing that the God of all creation wants to be friends with me? And actually, he wanted to be friend with me as a sinner. Because as we saw in Romans, that Jesus gave his life whilst we were yet sinners, in order that we might be friends with him. And you know, the other amazing thing is that not only does he want to be friends with me now, but he wants to spend eternity with me. I find that astonishing. And actually, if you look at one another, we're going to be spending eternity together ourselves. So our friendship had better be a good quality friendship, because you're stuck with me forever. So it's amazing that Jesus chooses us to be his friend. And you know, if you look through the New Testament, Jesus was a friend of sinners. Jesus was a friend of the poor, of the marginalized, the outcasts, the lepers, the rejected. Jesus reached out and touched them all, inviting them to become his friends. What a friend we have in Jesus, indeed. So how do we grow in friendship? Just lastly, I'd like to suggest four things, really, that helps us to grow in friendship with Jesus. The first is obedience. It comes out of mutual submission, trust. It comes out of the Holy Spirit working within us. It comes out of us saying, thank you for choosing me to be your friend. I will be your friend forever. I will follow you. I will trust you. I will do the things that you want me to do because I love you and because you're my friend. We need to cultivate our relationship with Jesus. The Bible talks about us abiding in him, dwelling with him. How do we dwell in him? Well, we pray, we worship, we study, we read God's word, we spend our time wisely, we invest in the things of God. You know, when I think about this week coming up, am I going to be investing in the things of God this week? Have I done it last week? Are we going to be investing in the things of God? Are we going to be moving on from being an acquaintance to being a true friend with Jesus? Are we going to seek to produce fruit in and through our lives? Thirdly, we need to deepen our love for him and for others. You know, the word for loving others in Greek is philos. But actually, phileo means a friend. So it's the same word, that we need to deepen our love and our friendships with one another. We need to deepen our love and our friendship with Jesus. We need to respond to him. And we need to grow our faith in him too. Somebody once said that faith is forsaking all, I trust him. Forsaking all, I trust him. We can't please God without faith. So if we deepen our friendship with God, then we need to grow in our faith. We need to grow in our trust. We need to grow in our hope. We need to grow in encouragement. We need to grow in relationship together in all sorts of ways. We need to grow individually in our relationship with Jesus and as a church in our relationship with Jesus. And it comes down to our commitment to one another and our commitment to him. It comes down to worship and prayer and fellowship and relationship and service, serving God together as friends together, serving him. So let's think about those two questions that we started with at the beginning. What are the qualities you would expect to experience in a good friendship? Are you exercising those qualities? Are those qualities coming to the fore as you've reflected on those, as we've looked at the Bible passage? What's your experience of, or your expectation of, friendship with Jesus? What does that look like in your life and in my life?